Former Congresswoman and U.S. presidential candidate Cynthia McKinney has been in Libya working with the non-governmental fact-finding mission for 10 days already. She's here at private expense, as are the other members of her team, to establish real, evidence-based facts on the reality of life in Tripoli amid NATO bombardments and civil war. She joins me now. Thank you very much, Cynthia.
Thank you for having me.
Well, why is fact-finding necessary in Tripoli?
I can't remember who it was that said that truth is the first casualty of war, but we in the United States are very well aware that our country went to war against Iraq and encouraged the entire world to go to war with it against Iraq 935 times. The Bush administration lied to the American people and the international community about the reasons for going into Iraq. And then, after the deed was done, we had our Deputy Secretary of Defense say, well, you know, we were in a room and we were just trying to figure out which lie the American people would buy. So we settled upon weapons of mass destruction. And just like that, the international community was drawn into a war that has completely decimated, destroyed an entire country, the country of Iraq. So now when our government says that they have a responsibility to bomb people in order to save them, I think it's important for the American people to understand what the truth is.
You've mentioned Iraq, so do you think Libya could be like second Iraq?
No, what I think is that Libya could become Somalia. One, in the reaction of the people to the possibility of foreign ground troops here. I don't think that is going to be anything that is welcomed by anyone other than the Libyan NATO allies who are called the rebels.
You've been here for a while already, so what have you seen?
What concerns me is that we have reports that depleted uranium is being used. We know that there are the missiles that are coming down, the bunker buster bombs that are being used. If depleted uranium is being used here, then everything that we see and breathe is contaminated.
What are these reports come from?
Actually, a member of parliament in the United Kingdom was the first person who mentioned the possible NATO use of depleted uranium that I am aware of. And since that time, I have spoken with some expert scientists who are familiar with the telltale signs of depleted uranium use. One is how the particulate matter tastes in your mouth. If there is a metallic taste, and of course, since I've been here and there have been a lot of bombings, I have asked around about the metallic taste. One of the persons that I brought with me is an attorney, and I asked him, and he specifically said yes, that he had a metallic taste in his mouth. I have not spoken to Libyan scientists who have officially confirmed that, but of course, if we look at NATO and their choice of weaponry, we know that NATO has used depleted uranium where? In Eastern Europe, they've used it in Afghanistan, they're probably using it in Pakistan, and why would they not use it here?
What will your conclusions be?
My conclusions will be merely the truth as I see it. And of course, I just have spoken with the Dean of Political Science at the Al-Fateh University, also known as Nasser University, where two auditoriums were bombed. Now, why is NATO bombing universities? Why are they bombing compounds where people gather to express their joy and love and concern for their leader? I don't know why NATO is choosing these targets, but these are civilian targets. And when civilian targets are bombed, we have criminal activity.
Are civilians dying in Tripoli?
Yes. We've also been to Al-Qadra Hospital, And there we were able to speak with people and see their wounds. Now, I was able to see the wounds of the people, and they looked very similar to the wounds of those who experienced dime weapons. That's a dense, inert, metallic weapon that was used in Gaza.
Now we've heard these massive bombardments from a distance, but what kind of effect are they having on the civilian population?
This is another aspect of the NATO operation, and I'd like to stress this idea of collective punishment, because of course we've heard of collective punishment in the context of Israel and its treatment of the Palestinians, but what we are seeing here is a kind of collective punishment as well, where NATO is preventing shipments of fuel and food and medicine to come in. There have been efforts to actually get medicine into the country that have been denied by NATO. Of course, it is impossible to go on any street and miss the huge queues of sometimes 3 and 4 deep of cars that go on for and on and on and on as they queue up to get gasoline from the service station. This is a NATO policy, and this is also a policy of collective punishment. This is targeting the civilian population, and whenever you target a civilian population, you're committing a crime.
You've been able to speak to people, I guess.
Yes, I've spoken to people, and the one question that they ask me over and over and over again is why? That is the question. Why? And so when I go back to the States, I'm going to try and ask that question. Why? Why is this happening? Certainly, it is not for humanitarian reasons, because what is being caused by NATO is a humanitarian catastrophe.
What could be the goal of this strategy, do you think?
What we have to do, if we really want to understand the motivations of US policy, we have to go back to what Ray McGovern, who is a former CIA analyst, had to say. And he described US policy as being driven by O, I, and L. Now, what's O, I, and L? O for oil, I for Israel, L is for logistics. And so he described the logistics as those logistics that were needed by the neocons to carry out their policies on behalf of Israel. And if we look at the behavior of the NATO allies in Libya, the so-called rebels, what we see is they open up a central bank. So that means that, of course, the banking system that is independent here in Tripoli, in Benghazi, that banking system will be tied to the international banking system. They also have concluded agreements with Israel. Now, what are those agreements? One of those agreements is to provide a base for Israel in Libya.
NATO Secretary General Rasmussen told RT just a while ago they're only hitting targets of military value. Do you accept that?
No, absolutely not. A university is not a military value. Certainly the murder of Muammar Gaddafi's son and grandbabies is not of military value. I went to that house. I saw the swing set, the foosball set. I took the journalist there, and there was nothing of military value there. It's just innocent people.
Does that mean Rasmussen's military people are telling half-truths?
I think there's nothing of the truth.
What we're seeing here seems a bit personal now. Will they kill Gaddafi no matter what?
I can only read what the NATO leaders have said, and they have said that the Colonel Gaddafi is a legitimate target. Well, this murder, and I don't think that there's anywhere that murder is permitted. This is targeted assassination. This is extrajudicial killing. This goes against international law, international humanitarian law, international human rights law, every aspect of the law. And so now has NATO become a murder machine, a targeted assassination machine?
Does Gaddafi know that? I don't think.
Well, that's... I don't know what he knows. He probably knows far more than you and I.
Any plan to meet him?
Well, if that were to be made available to me, I would probably take advantage of that.
And my last question, if Gaddafi leaves, and it looks like he will have to no matter what will he leave behind?
Well, I think that's a question that is more appropriate for the people of Libya. I know that I am here on a fact-finding mission and solely to understand the truth, to transmit the truth as I see it, because the international press largely are not telling the international community the truth.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKinney, for being with us.